Good evening and greetings in Jesus' name. It's good to be here and gather in with you here in Kirkwood. It's good to be here and see familiar faces, even in a different building than remember you at last time. Good to see the spacious area you have here to meet and worship together. Well, the message before us this evening is qualifying for CO status. What do we mean when we talk about CO status? What is a CO? Anyone?
Conscientious objector.
Okay. Goal of this message is to inform us and help evaluate our view on conscientious objector status, thinking primarily about non-resistance and how it affects, could affect our lives if there was ever a time when there was the need or the call for a draft by the military. And conscientious objector, I'm going to be reading some definitions tonight that come directly from U.S. Selective Service website, military definitions. So the website of the Selective Service describes, gives a definition of a conscientious objector. A conscientious objector is one who is opposed to serving in the armed forces and or bearing arms on the ground of moral or religious principles. So that's a fairly broad definition, and we probably would want to narrow that down just a little bit, and we want to look at the Bible and look at some of the teachings of Jesus, why we choose to identify as a conscientious objector in the event of a draft, in the event of being called in to stand before the officials and give our position on that. I invite you to open your Bibles to Luke chapter 6. In Luke chapter 6, and we could also have went to Matthew 5, parallel passage, but I chose to read the verses from Luke 6 this evening that I believe are Jesus' teaching on how we should relate to our fellow man, relate to our enemies, those who are opposed to us, those who are, our enemies. And note as we read this, it's not exactly talking about war and armed conflict. It's talking about everyday life. It's talking about how we relate to our neighbors, those we meet up with and do business with, and how we relate to them when they mistreat us. And that's going to be a theme that we'll see as we go through the message in qualifying for CO status is something that is very closely tied to our everyday life and the way we relate to our fellow man. I'm going to read from Luke chapter 6. I'm going to start reading at verse 27 and read to verse 36. Jesus teaching here, teaching his disciples, "But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful." As I said, these verses talk about everyday life. It talks about lending, talks about those that mistreat us in business dealings and relationships and how to relate redemptively to them and show love, forgiveness, treat others the way we would want to be treated. Jesus taught that we should love our enemies, return good for evil. It should go beyond our friends. This kind treatment should go beyond our friends and include those who we consider our enemies or those who consider us their enemies as well. Those that treat us unkindly, those that have harmful intentions. I believe another reason that Jesus gave for not becoming involved in armed conflict, and this is shifting just a little bit from his direct teaching on non-resistance, but in John chapter 18, Jesus was standing before Pilate, and Pilate was asking him, questioning him, and Jesus answered him in John 18, verse 36, Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence." So this evening, we are part of Jesus' kingdom. We are citizens of his kingdom, and we identify with that kingdom first. In Ephesians, Paul talks about being an ambassador for Christ. An ambassador is somebody who is from another country that lives in the foreign country to represent his country, represent his king, his lord. That's what we're called to do, and that is to show this love of Jesus, the love, the way to treat our enemies. We're to portray, to show the love of our king, and we will not get involved in the conflicts of the country we're living in, witnessing to. When a country is involved in war, they do not require foreign citizens that are living in their country to become involved. I was in Ukraine twice over the last 2 years, and this was very evident. You would pull up to a military checkpoint, and the military police would ask for your ID, and you would hand a U.S. passport to them. They immediately were thanking you for being there, thanked you for coming and providing humanitarian aid, but they did not ask us to join in the conflict. They did not say, "You're an able-bodied man, we need you to go to the front lines to fight." They would immediately give the foreign visitors a pass. Now, if you were a Ukrainian citizen, you probably shouldn't be out traveling through those military checkpoints if you wanted to avoid getting asked that question. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world." And if you and I are part of his kingdom and our loyalty is first of all to him, we have no choice but to say no to joining in the conflicts of this world, the countries that are here around us that we live in. And I believe it's going to affect a lot more than military involvement, getting involved in the military conflicts. It's going to affect how we relate to politics, how much we get involved in discussion and involvement in politics. It's going to affect how we relate to jury duty, how we view the law enforcement officers. The list could go on. The way we relate to building codes and traffic laws, and you can see where I'm going with this, but how do we relate to them? Let's respect our government leaders, the ones that are put in place by God, ordained by God to keep peace and order. But we are part of another kingdom, and we don't get involved in that. That's why we do not become directly involved in that. Well, thinking about conscientious objectors and a little bit of history, just some quick history of how this worked in the past. The U.S. government has not had an active draft for the last 52 years. And a couple of the places I preached this message, we had some men that served time in 1W service. I'm not going to even ask for a raise of hands here because I don't think we have anyone old enough that they were drafted. But there is a generation that is fast fading that has some firsthand experience. And I encourage you, if you know some of those men, to go talk to them and ask them about it. It was very formative in their convictions, their lives. It was interesting talking to some of those men as I preached this message and talking to them after the service, the stories they would tell of their time serving. And so the way that would work, continuing on in this history, the Selective Service Act was signed into law by President Woodrow Wilson in 1917. Throughout World War I and World War II, there were many men that were drafted into the armed forces. At the end of World War II, the draft was again used to provide troops for the Korean War and then the Vietnam War. And if you know your history, you know the Vietnam War was something that was not very popular. There was a lot of people that were opposed to the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. And the United States had a need for soldiers that was not being met by voluntary enlistment. From the years of 1964 to 1973, the military drafted 2.2 million American men for the conflict in Vietnam. And that brings a big question to those of us that are part of another kingdom that are not going to get involved in that. What happens if I'm drafted? And that was a real thing for that generation that is in their 70s today and older, those that faced that time. There was an opportunity to register as a conscientious objector when they were drafted. These men were assigned to work in voluntary service for 2 years. They could go and serve in a program that was approved by the military. It was a way to help humanity around them. A lot of times they worked as orderlies in hospitals or mental institutions. Some served in camps working with children, young people. There was many different ways that they could work. And throughout the early years of this 1W program, these men would go, they would live in another community. They were away from their families, away from their church community. And during this time, there was many spiritual casualties. There was men who chose to stand on their beliefs of non-resistance, but they caved to the pressures of culture around them when they got away from their brotherhood, they got away from their parents, their church leaders. And as a result of these casualties and the concern of some visionary brothers led to the formation of the MMM. They started units in Wilmington, Delaware and Danville, Pennsylvania. I'm sure some of you have heard some of that history and know some of that history. Later grew into the formation of the Eastern Pennsylvania Mennonite Church, where many of you have roots and background and know a lot of that history. That was a good program. It was something that was very valuable because it provided structure for these young men that were drafted. They could live there. They had spiritual direction and oversight and could live there in a group home that was and then go to fill their service to the country. Shifting a little bit to today's process for conscientious objectors, how it works today. As I mentioned, there has not been a draft for 52 years. The U.S. military is an all-volunteer staffed military. And we live in a time when the thought of war and military conflict are not necessarily foreign to us, but yet the idea of conflict on U.S. soil probably seems foreign to us. Some of us remember the attacks of September 11, 2001. It reminded us that our country was not immune to attacks from foreign countries or foreign actors. But the thought of battles being fought on our soils, the soils of this country, seem rather remote. But then yet there remains conflicts today that are quite alive and well. You think of the Russian-Ukraine conflict, the recent conflict between Israel and Hamas, civil wars in Yemen, Sudan, Myanmar, Ethiopia. We do live in troubled times. There is conflicts that are ongoing in the world today, military conflicts, and there is... Jesus said that there would be wars and rumors of wars, but that we should not be afraid because it is part of coming up to the end of time. So let's take confidence in that Jesus said these things will happen. It's a sign that he's coming back soon. But even though we live in a country that we could say is at peace, we haven't had an active draft for the last 52 years, the U.S. government still has in place and ready to go a system to call recruits if needed. The Selective Service System is run by a director that is a presidential appointee. The Selective Service has 124 full-time employees, and then there is approximately 11,000 civilian draft board members that make up the backbone of the Selective Service program. These draft board members serve in a voluntary capacity, but are available if a draft is ever needed. And there is draft board members that live in Lancaster County. I should have checked. Most counties have at least 5 draft board members. There's 5 members to a board. Lancaster County may have 2 or 3 draft boards with the population you have here in this county. These are local boards, people that live in your communities that know who the Plain community people are. They know who the Mennonites and the Amish of Lancaster County are, I believe. These are not folks that are sitting in an office in Washington. They're men and women that are here and interact with you that, as I said, know who you as a community, as Anabaptist are. And these are the men and women that will decide whether or not our young men qualify as conscientious objectors. They're the ones that make that decision. Well, how does that work? I'm going to read a little more from the Selective Service website. The Selective Service's mission is to register virtually all men residing in the United States. If a draft is ever needed, the process must be fair. And that fairness depends on having all eligible men register. In the event of a draft, for every man who fails to register, another man would be required to take his place in service to his country. There's a penalty for not registering. Failure to register with Selective Service is a violation of the Military Selective Service Act. Conviction for such a violation may result in imprisonment for up to 5 years and/or a fine of not more than $250,000. I'll hasten on to say that it has been since the 1980s since anyone has been prosecuted for not registering with the Selective Service or convicted for that. But who needs to register? All male U.S. citizens and male immigrants who are between the ages of 18 to 25. So who of the men here are between the ages of 18 and 25 tonight? Okay, we have a few here that are the direct, you're the ones that the Selective Service Boards are, you would be the ones that would be called before them if this would ever happen. But I don't want the rest of you to tune out and say this message doesn't apply, because it does. It's something that I believe we all need to be thinking about. There are very few exceptions for young men that do not need to. I think the only exception would be if somebody is institutionalized with medical because of medical reasons and not able to function, they would not need to. Young women do not need to register with Selective Service. It is only men at this point that need to register. Now, I'm going to ask of you brothers, 18 and older, how many of you know or remember registering for Selective Service? Know that you did that. Okay, thank you. It's actually a very simple process. You can go to the website, and it doesn't take long to do. I actually went to the website and searched and found my registration from when I was 18 years old. It's there, and they have record of it. All you need is your name, social security number, and date of birth, and you can find it in a few minutes' time. One of the qualifiers for qualifying for CO status is that the person has registered with Selective Service. So I would urge young men, as you turn 18, register with them, put your name in, fill out the paperwork, even though it may seem like they know where I am anyway, they have my information anyway, why do I need to register? It's something that we are asked to do by law, and something that is, I believe, gives them something to then have that database. If it's ever needed, they can call young men to come before them, and then at that point is when you would register as a conscientious objector, after you would be called to a draft. I'm going to read a few more, another page from the website about conscientious objectors and how the Selective Service has in their program that is in place and ready to go a way to relate to conscientious objectors. Today, all conscientious objectors are required to register with the Selective Service system. Conscientious objector is one who is opposed to serving in the armed forces and or bearing arms on the grounds of moral or religious principles. In the event of a draft, once a man gets a notice that he has been found qualified for military service, he has the opportunity to make a claim for classification as a conscientious objector. A registrant making a claim for conscientious objection is required to appear before his local board to explain his beliefs. So in the event of a draft and a young man being called, they would be expected to appear before that local board to explain his beliefs, the reasons why he wants to claim conscientious objector status. He may provide written documentation or include personal appearances by people he knows who can attest to his claims. So you can take some character witnesses, some friends with you to attest to your claims, but you will be the one asked the questions. His written statement, you can also submit a written statement. His written statement might explain how he arrived at his beliefs and the influences beliefs have had on how he lives his life. So think about that, young man. Maybe you should take the opportunity to sit down and write some of those things out, how the influence your beliefs have had on how you live your life. The local board will decide whether to grant or deny a CO classification based on the evidence a registrant has presented. A man may appeal a local board's decision to a Selective Service District Appeal Board. If the appeal board also denies his claim but the vote is not unanimous, he may farther appeal the decision to the National Appeal Board. So who qualifies for CO status? Beliefs which qualify a registrant for CO status may be religious in nature, but don't have to be. Beliefs may be moral or ethical. However, a man's reason for not wanting to participate in a war must not be based on politics, expediency, or self-interest. And this last sentence from their website, I think, is a challenge to us today. And this is the one I want to think about a little bit. In general, the man's lifestyle prior to making his claim must reflect his current claims. There's a lot in that statement. But what they're saying is they want you to be living a life before you're called by the draft. Before you're drafted, you must be living in such a way that your claim when you're drafted lines up with your previous lifestyle. We'll think about that a little more. In general, the man's lifestyle prior to making his claim must reflect his current claims. If there comes a time when a draft is deemed necessary by the President and Congress, there is a process in place to determine how to call young men. And I find this intriguing that it's been 52 years, but there still is this process in place, ready to go. If Congress and the President were to reinstate a military draft, the Selective Service System would conduct a national draft lottery to determine the order in which young men would be drafted. The lottery would establish a priority of call based on the birth dates of registrant. The first men drafted would be those turning age 20 during the calendar year of the lottery. For example, if the draft was held this year in 2025, those men born in 2005 would be considered first. Men turning 21 in the year of the draft would be of second priority. Men turning 22 will be third, and so on until a man turns 26, at which time he is over the age of liability. Younger men would not be called in that year until men in the 20 to 25 age group were called. Because of the enormous impact of this lottery, it would be conducted publicly with full coverage by the media. Accredited observers from public interest groups will have full access to observe the proceedings. So they have a system in place that would be able to be implemented to call young men if needed. And my goal in this message is not to create fear that this is going to happen next week or next month. There's no current indication that it will happen anytime, but it could. I think it does us well to think about our response, whether or not this ever happens in our lifetime. Whether it happens when any of you young men still are in that 18 to 25 year range, or whether it's the boys that were sitting on the front two benches that have to face this, it does us well to think about what will our response be. If you were ever called before a draft board, would you be ready to give your testimony as to why you're a conscientious objector? Would you be able to explain to them why you believe what you do? They will require you to explain what you believe and why you believe it. To qualify for CO status, you must show the local board your beliefs are not just something you developed last week when you got the notice to appear before the draft board. You need to show to them that this is something that has changed your life. I found a few sample questions on a website that were given as possible sample material for what could be asked or ways for a young man to articulate his thoughts on it. And I'm going to just read over those and give some thoughts on it. First one is, describe your beliefs, which are the reason for your claiming conscientious objection to combatant military training and service, or to all military training and service. Can you describe those beliefs? Do you have a testimony that you can share with someone? And keep in mind, your local draft board member may be the Baptist pastor from the church just down the road that is knows his Bible as well as you do. And he will be be able to argue and take you to scriptures that will, having you have to turn to the words of Jesus and explain to him why you have chosen to take Jesus' teachings literally and explain some of those things. Can you articulate your convictions when asked? And I'm going to challenge you, if you hope to and expect to do that when you're called before a draft board, you need to be doing it today. And not just for you young men, sisters as well, all of us. Let's be ready to give an answer to those that ask us why we do what we do, why we choose to live in a way that stands out to the world around us. If you expect to be able to answer a draft board effectively in the future, let's be sharing a testimony today with people we meet. Don't wait till you're up against it with the authorities, the military, the draft board to start testifying of your beliefs, but do it today. Whether it's going along with New York for Jesus and in an organized way, or taking that time to share your thoughts, your convictions, your beliefs with that person that you meet at the grocery store, at the gas pumps, at the hardware store. Jesus said in Luke 9:26, "For whosoever shall be ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he shall come in his own glory and in his Father's and of the holy angels." Let's never be ashamed to identify with Jesus. Let's never shy away from answering. When someone asks us a question, never shy away from being ready to share the gospel. The second question or discussion point for a young man to articulate his thoughts to a draft board: describe how and when you acquired these beliefs. How and when did you become a conscientious objector? Did you decide just last week you want to be a conscientious objector? Where did you learn those beliefs? Who taught them to you? I think these are all things that could be part of your answer to a draft board. They're looking for a personal testimony and personal conviction, but I believe this would be an opportunity to bring in your brotherhood, the teaching program that you were raised with, maybe the things you learned at Bible school or developed through Bible study. It will be a place to bring in your parents, your church leadership, your brothers and sisters in the church, and ask them to help to explain why you have chosen to identify with a non-resistant group. Yes, they're looking for a personal testimony, but I believe it also is something that we as a group need to have that as a core foundational principle that we all support and help each other to grow in, help our young people to understand. The third one: explain what most clearly shows that your beliefs are deeply held. You may wish to include a description of how your beliefs affect the way you live. How do your beliefs on non-resistance affect the way you live? Something for us all to think about. How does it affect the way you relate to that driver on the road that cuts you off? How does it affect the way you relate to that customer that is pulling some shady deals? How does it affect to the way we relate to our government leaders, the building codes, the many different things that affect our daily life? How has our beliefs affected the way we live? I trust they have affected the way we live. Are you known as a person that respects the laws of the land? Do we drive respectfully and obediently to traffic laws? And I don't know how much the draft boards are going to delve into your driving history, your phone calls. They say they won't use social media, but if it came down to a conflict and there was a lot of questions, would they bring some of that up? Would they look into that history? It is something for us to think about. Does our life today portray something that would qualify us for conscientious objector status? Remember that sentence from the website that says, in general, the man's lifestyle prior to making his claim must reflect his current claims. Well, there's the CAS program. I want to mention that a little bit, that Christian Aid Ministries has in place for young men to serve. Young men between the ages of 18 to 25 can give a couple weeks of service. It's recognized by Selective Service as an approved pilot program that is there and could be scaled up if it was needed. A CAS program is something that you can sign up for, and those records are kept. CAS keeps records of that, and that is something that could be mentioned if you were ever called before a draft board. I did give a couple weeks of service. Shifting just a little bit and towards the end here, I want to think of another thing. What would happen today? By and large, our neighbors, our society around us respects and values our input in society. But did we ever think what would happen if that changed? What if there was a conflict that developed that society, the world around us, got behind and really thought was a valuable involvement, and we would be standing off to the side and saying, we're a conscientious objector. Would we be able to take the ridicule, the scorn of our neighbors if we faced that? It's something to think about. We're accustomed to being praised for our work ethic, our good business practices. Are we ready to face mockery and ridicule, being called a coward or a yellow belly? Something to think about, something to be aware of, that Jesus did not say that we're going to have an easy road all the time. And there is that possibility. Something to be aware of. Well, in conclusion, let's be living lives today that are exemplifying the life of Jesus, showing that we're part of another kingdom. We're part of a kingdom that is following him. Have something that has affected our daily life, something that affected the way we live from Monday to Saturday, not just Sunday. Let's let our light shine, showing the world around us that Jesus' kingdom is not of this world, and we are part of his kingdom today. Let's kneel together for prayer.